Working hard is worth it if you're seeing results. And when it comes to working out, the same thing is true. You want the maximum benefit in the time you have, and that's exactly what Tonal is built for. And with their latest iteration, Tonal 2, you can ensure your workout is more tailored and effective than ever. Tonal's at-home strength training system uses adaptive weight to learn from your movement and set the optimal weight for every move, adjusting in one-pound increments up to 250 pounds, challenging even the most advanced users to push their limits. You can also experience a full body burn with the new Aero HIIT workouts, the perfect blend of heart-pumping cardio and strength. Plus, the new built-in Smart View leverages a high-resolution camera that lets you see yourself during your workout, analyzes your movement, and provides real-time coaching, just like a personal trainer. Right now, Tonal is offering our listeners $200 off your Tonal purchase with promo code 200TONAL. That's Tonal.com and use promo code 200TONAL for $200 off your purchase. That's Tonal.com. Promo code 200TONAL for $200 off.
Today on Lulz, Nerdy Tenor returns. All kinds of stuff going on in the Endgame Syndicate neck of the woods. Just acquired Run the Sims. We'll hear a little bit about some of their plans for that. We'll also pick Dan's brain about what kind of research projects he's thinking about, what kind of stuff we can expect on the Sims front, and hear how this year has gone in that regard. I'm Pete with Brick. This is Lulz. Let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS guys pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, we are back for another Lulz. Last week we had a fun show with Joe Holka, and now we bring our old pal Nerdy Tenor back on from the basement, the ping pong dungeon. How are we doing, Nerdy?
Pretty good. Glad to be here again.
Yeah, man. I need to say this, you know, right up front, because we do have some viewers that are expecting Brick and I's massive Super Bowl breakdown, where we go through all the various edges with the offensive line, defensive line play. We will get to that today, but we need to be good hosts and we need to welcome our guest and talk about other things. Right, Brian?
Yeah. Well, I thought we were going to do that behind the paywall this week, but if you want to do it free, go ahead.
Yeah. Brian and I have been
too much of a burden. You know, I don't want to drag the show into the dirt.
No, you really are a drag on our show, and you take away from what we do best. That's breakdowns. But yeah, I feel like, I don't know, it's been a few months since you were on, but a lot of big things happening as far as in-game syndicate. And yeah, for people who don't know, do you want to let them know what's the new news over there?
Yeah, well, we, you know, in-game syndicate, we bought Run the Sims. So for people who missed the announcement, we had a couple of goals there. The first, it was that, just a practical matter, it's nice to have your own tool to use when you're doing shows. So that's just sort of an obvious thing. Yeah. But the other thing is, we've always had different ideas for things we wanted to develop, and you can always plead and cajole other sites to add features, but we kind of wanted to have the power to implement the things that we wanted to implement. And having Run the Sims already in place sort of gives us a sort of a nice base to start from, to build on. So that's most of the justification, I would say, is just being able to build our own stuff and then show how we would use it. Right. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We want to do things that are a little different and more focused, I would say. So we're not hoping to be the one-stop shop kind of site, because there's only four of us and we don't have the time or inclination to do anything like that.
Yeah, but it seemed like it is a good fit in that, you know, there's a lot of sites who do offer both tools and content. And the fact that there was Run the Sims, who didn't do much via content, it was all pretty much tools and then some promotion from Pat and that crew. And then you guys who have been basically exclusively doing content. Like, it is like a really nice marriage, because I figure like it probably would have been messier if it was a site that was, say, more evolved and they had a content arm and a network. And then it's like, how do we get that to vibe with us? Like, this is just like, oh, no, we're just going to integrate the tool into what we do.
Yeah, it seems nice. And I also like Run the Sims design philosophy seemed very much to be like narrow focus as well. It's like, do a few things well. Don't try to do everything, which I think it is very much what we have in mind for any tools that we provide as well, right? It's like, we have this idea we want to implement, you know, and we can go make that happen, hopefully. So.
Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, I was just doing, I did a show with Cody Main from ETR over the weekend, who obviously does a ton of Showdown stuff and using the Sims there. And like, we were talking about how they're going to release some content on, you know, different scenarios. Like, it's a blowout, Eagles blowout. What is our Sim like? I mean, that's the beauty of Run the Sims, is that you can go in there yourself and plug in those inputs and really mess with stuff.
Yeah.
Because Brian's talked about it too. Like, a lot of times there's a black box nature to what's going on in these Sims. And I feel like the RTS product kind of like lays it all out to bear of like, tweak it and you'll see what happens here.
Yeah. And just having a little more time to think about like overall philosophies of what we want to do, like very much what you said, like there are a lot of amazing products out there that are extremely complicated in terms of how they're functioning in the back end. We want as much as possible for it to be very transparent exactly what our tools are doing. You know, there's a limit to that, but that's the direction we want to go. So want it like easy to understand, but very powerful. And then the other philosophy is we want users as much as possible to be able to bring their own inputs for the entire process. So your own projections, your own, you know, correlations, your own ownership, your own field generation, you're just like, as much as possible, let the user bring whatever they want. With that said, we want like defaults out of the box to be very easy to use, right? So I think that's sort of what I'm thinking in a nutshell. Hopefully I didn't say anything Brian doesn't like. But
Brian, how do you think about that? Because I would say that maybe your guys's challenge is that like you've clearly cultivated an audience of like already successful DFS players, people who are wanting to just learn how to fish, right? Like you're not giving them the fish here. And then Run the Sims though can run as a product of like, oh yeah, put this in, get the answers or whatever. So how do you marry that idea or like your audience of people who are already playing DFS at a high level, but then having this tool that they're actually excited to use themselves?
I think we're gonna have to bring someone else in. Because like Dan and me specifically, but like even Yuta, like it is really like a group of pros, basically, like, I don't know, I think really sharp players and stuff. And I'm not even like, how many times have I been wrong on my estimates, Pete, over the years on like how many people know what a dupe is or who's using Sims? And so like, I was a little out of touch there. So, we'll probably need some more, you know, marketing for normies or whatever, on that end. But like I think the front end, Pete, is going to be really similar to what you've seen. We'll definitely make some changes because like that's where we want it, where like Yuta and Adam are happy with the interface and it has all those little bells and whistles that they want for that type of stuff. But like the back end stuff is a lot of the stuff that you won't see that will change to fit like what we talk about in our videos, basically. So like, that kind of started this whole thing rolling was, it's like when you make videos like the ones we do, either someone else is going to do your ideas or you could do them. Like, it's not the end of the world to have somebody else do your ideas too, you know, because then you don't have to, you know, do all the work.
Well, it's worse as if nobody does it. I mean, it's annoying if they do it and it's annoying if they don't do it. So it's like, it sort of feels lose-lose psychologically, you know.
Yeah.
And you mentioned bringing someone in. Like, that is actually one of the really nice things about Run the Sims is it actually lends itself to content. I remember when I was doing some of my showdown shows way back when Run the Sims just started and I partnered with Justin and them, like, it was actually good content for a stream because it's like, I would ask the chat, I'm like, what scenario game do you want us to run? Or like, whose market share do you think is way off? And let's tweak it. And it's actually fun to have those things that you can go change and like bat those ideas around.
Yeah, no, it's great for that. That is, like I said at the top, one of the two justifications, especially for NFL. Like, just having a tool that you can easily bang out scenarios on and see what happens is just, you know, that's just great for content. But Brian's right. We will need somebody to sort of bridge the gap between, like, the hardcore players. I would call them hardcore, like a lot of the people in Endgame right now, which is cool, or want to be hardcore getting there. But we need to bridge that gap a little bit with maybe people in the middle of the distribution who are like not hardcore yet, want to get better, like want some tools, and hopefully they sign up for both. The other thing is right now, like Endgame and Run the Sims are still two different things. We're going to run them as two sites. So there will be plenty of people who only want one of them and not the other, and that's fine.
And Adam is also can do this too, but like how many of Adam's followers are like, oh, I want to pay for what Endgame provides? There's probably a whole bunch who don't, but who would subscribe to a, you know, whatever optimizer sim product. So that's helpful too. We weren't going to do a lot of the stuff that Run the Sims has. So it's kind of like a bonus too, Pete. And we got to figure out like how exactly we want to approach like the prop sniper and stuff like that. And there's subs who like, and like, so like the F1, I just figured no one would want it. And then in the RTS Discord, like eight people tagged me, like, keep going, keep doing it. I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess if people want it, we can definitely add, cause a lot of the stuff we're going to add, it would work on F1 or any other. It's like kind of universal ideas.
And how are you guys going to handle? Because I remember, and it might have changed in more recently, and apologies if it did and I'm misremembering, but like I know at least at the start, like for a lot of stuff, Justin had like a service provider for ownership, where it wasn't, you know, someone internally at RTS doing it. Like, how do you guys plan on handling all the inputs? Who's doing that?
He did both. So he got his ownership from Sports Data's API. Just for the initial to populate something on the optimizer, and then him and Furby would do the back end, changing it and adjusting it. So what you see in some of the sim is just that sports data information. I'm pretty sure they adjusted the ownership, not just the projections on the back end. Maybe I'm misremembering, but
yeah, I need to look at that again. But eventually, again, the goal, and I don't know how long this will take, the goal is users should be able to tweak any part of the inputs in theory. Like the field, the ownership, the projections, the distributions, the correlations. Like that's sort of like my guiding star there. But yes, we're going to need to have some kind of default values and, you know, for people to use. But we'll see. We'll see what that
looks like. It's gonna depend on the sport. I'm 90% sure, 95% sure we're gonna have internal projections. We'll just get them done with everybody. Because the reason we don't want to guarantee projections, and like we're not gonna do NBA type of stuff, even though Adam does NBA projections, is like he doesn't want to guarantee his projections. Yeah. Like last night, I'm not playing NBA right now. And now I'm like, I might just wait till MLB. Because like Giannis got ruled out post scratch.
Oh my God.
Another one. And it's just like happens every night. And it's like, and every night I'm like, man, thank God I'm not playing. Cause I know I would have, like, if all these guys are pissed off, I'm going to have a big percentage of this guy too.
The amount of time and effort I've put in to lighting money on fire playing NBA is just incalculable. Like that, it's just the time to reward ratio is not the greatest for me so far. Working on it, but Yeah, it's,
well, it's a pain would you guys? Because right now, to run the Sims, you can't you can't upload your own projections or ownership, can you?
So we want we're gonna add that.
Okay.
We want that
because then that's kind of like the game changer too. Of like it takes the pressure off of you to like always be generating and just be like, hey, you clearly probably subscribe to if not one, but
yeah,
you have this.
That's right. Almost everybody who's gonna have this is gonna have some source of truth already. We would think.
You kind of got to do them though to get the props to work and stuff like that. Like you need you know, because you don't want to rely on another company to get their data up if you're going to do props, right? Like that doesn't make much sense. It doesn't. I mean, maybe we just stop doing props, but it sounds like they make some good revenue. But the idea of like using ETR in their projections is like a no brainer. I think that we're going to add where. If you sub the ETR and you want to take what they put and then put it into our like simulator and our play-by-play engine and everything, even go into that minutia that you know with Run the Sims and change the shares and stuff and change the game script, you can do that even with someone else's numbers. So that's the plan.
Yeah, I know. Like I've been messing around a little bit with unabated stuff lately, and they have some cool stuff too where you can upload multiple projection sets and like run a blended thing with like yours and theirs, the market-based projections, and like different options for which projection set you then want to look at the available, you know, prop screener is like a pretty handy thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we're not going to get to it this week, but maybe next week we're going to do just like a little closed show with subs and RTS subs and whoever wants to join for ideas on like, what do you want to see added and then get them on the list.
Yeah. Very good. So then Dan, where does all, cause you know, a particular interest to me this year was all of your battle royale, sim kind of exploration. And obviously enjoyed the show you did with Davis. And I was one of the people pestering you in the Discord to do additional runs of the Sims throughout the season. Where does that fit in anywhere with Run the Sims? Like, is there a version of what you do for that could be forward facing, for the BR games?
First of all, it wasn't a pain to get putzed about posting the data. It's actually a nice reminder that I needed to do it. So thank you for that. So I would classify all of the VR stuff as interesting area of research. I want to attack these gigantic BBM style / playoff style best ball tournaments.
Yeah.
Using the methods I've developed. It's very ambitious and it's not at the top of the queue right now, but it's definitely in there. There are a couple possible outcomes. One is that I just don't get to it at all. Another is I basically create some kind of model version of BBM using like pretend teams and projections and stuff, and try to learn from that, some sort of idealized version to study. And then the best possible case is I actually get something working for the real thing. But it's, as I've said before on stream, it's incredibly ambitious. It's quite difficult to do this the way one would want to, which is to simulate the entire season of football, right? The entire 17 weeks, right? Quite tricky.
What would be like the output you're looking for? Would it be, you know, like target exposures, like obviously ADP is fluid and so that's going to change. Like what would be the end goal if the project actually went well?
I think I'd be really interested to see how far it thinks you can reach in different spots. Like what delineation is there in the tiers of players? What kind of structures you get? Like how many running backs and receivers and tight ends and quarterbacks do you get on average in these? How much do you play for week 17? How much do you play for the earlier playoff? Like all of those kinds of things. That's all I think really fascinating stuff. Of course there's two punchlines. First, assuming I got this done, the first punchline is it's so absurdly volatile that like anything you learn from this it's going to take you 8 trillion lifetimes to realize the equity because the structures are so insane. It's a little less insane for the playoff best ball. Those are just, you know, ordinary sized. So I'm a little more optimistic there. And then the second thing is I suspect that a lot of what you learn in the big contest is going to be pretty common sense stuff.
Yeah.
Like, because the pool of players is so vast, like,
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is, you know, a couple structural things, like if you've got a superstar tight end, like, you can now wait to get your second tight end probably most of the time. And, like, you know, don't reach way crazy far in the early rounds and, you know, have some, you know, ceiling equity in week 17. I would not be surprised if it's just all kind of stuff people have already figured out.
Meta strategy possibly and some heuristics. So like, hopefully like they're like, forget about like if he is his grand plan works and it'll spit something out every draft, every pick you make, you know, that would be awesome. But let's say, I think worst case, you can get some heuristics that work every year, basically. And meta that is year by year. So like, you know, like the great arguments over, you know, fragile RB, zero RB, stuff like that would work like the BR data that you like so much, Pete, that he does, where it's like, oh my God, this week we have whatever 10% flex wide receiver, whatever, you know, I mean, whatever's high for that week, we go, oh, the structure is different this week. That's interesting. Why is it telling us that? And maybe it'll tell us that BBMs work the same way. It's like this year is actually probably more likely right now, given this information, this is kind of a better structure this year. Handcuff data.
Oh, huh.
That'd be really, that's hard to model. Very hard to model, but I would love to see that in
injury stuff is super hard. Like you're going to have to, like, ideally I would run a bunch of, this is how I would do it. I get the smallest thing that resembles BBM possible in an idealized model. So I'd create, I don't know, 6 football teams and have a relatively small contest and then do a baseline equilibrium strategy and then add injury risk. Like what happens when the average injury risk for a running back is whatever it is?
Right.
Now do the same thing for everybody, like, and tweak some knobs and see what changes. Like that's the first thing I would be playing with. So if I get there, that could make some interesting content, if nothing else, just to play around.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Again, like I'm not smart enough to understand how the sims are working, but it's almost too, it'd be cool if you had like, you know, cause you think about like the metas or the trends and, you know, it was looking, you know, this year, it's like, who's going to be this year's Puka and Kyren, the guy who's undrafted, who not only comes out of nowhere to be relevant, but returns like round one or round two value. And you're like, okay, that happens like once every 5 years, maybe you'll have someone like that, where it's like, you put a few of these things are like how, the average rates of how often a starting running back gets hurt and the backup running back becomes like a smash. And if you had those kind of like general things that could encompass the type of things that like, you know, flip a slate on its head, so to speak, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. Interesting stuff. But yeah, I think if anything, the playoff best ball is even more interesting because the the tree of events that could happen in the playoff that changes everything. I think that's, I'm more optimistic that I get something really useful for that. That's actually like really modeling the actual game because I did back of the napkin for like what I would have to do to model that out. And it seems doable. Yeah, we'll see.
We're definitely going to have Pete this year. We're already working on it. Combo data. Combo projections,
that's very cool,
projections, yeah. Single, double, triples. So, and overlaid right on Underdog and hopefully DraftKings too, but definitely Underdog. So that's new, right? That'll be cool. Something
will that extend to overlaying the combo data? Will that extend to the weeklies?
Yes. To the BRs? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So like right now, you know, we have like the Leone draft capital bucket stuff from the manifesto.
Yeah.
Like the idea is like there'll just be another tech. If you want combo data, you view combo data right there. And yeah. So like this is how I want to lay it out. You tell me if this doesn't work. You draft way more than me. So like let's say you take Barkley first, and then we'll show his top three combos.
Yes.
And then you take whoever in the second round. It'll show them their top three combos, and then like we'll list like four or five, whatever fits without getting crazy. Because after you get, you know, after you're in like the eighth round or whatever, it's kind of irrelevant.
I think it'd be cool if it could almost be like a percentage threshold, right? Where it's like, even if the third most popular combo is only happening like 2% of the time, like I don't care. It's more like, hey, if this is happening over 20% of the time, then I want to know that combo data so I can sidestep it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And it happens a lot more. I mean, this is that, like someone was asking about exploitive in the chat and stuff. This is the opposite of EQ strategy, right? This is, you're going pure exploitation here. So it's good. It's good, like the people who use this will have a good understanding of this anyways, but you want to know like how many times should Hertz and Barkley be in a EQ neutral or whatever, or plus EV portfolio or in the field. How many AJ Brown Hertz is a better example, probably.
Yeah.
You know, or Smith Hertz and Brown. And so, you pick Hertz, and then it goes, holy shit, they're together 80% of the time, right? Like that is too high. I'm going to go with Smith. I'm not going to take, you know, unless we talk about this, you know, in our streams, if something like just falls to you, you're gaining so much from the bad drafters in your draft. Like then you want to override most of those combo issues.
Another thing I think would be cool as like a spinoff of that project, Dan, like I see it from my vantage point, like, and you know, there's always this like wave of disillusionment as like the tournament's getting to the gauntlet weeks and things are settling and everyone's like, I put $37.50 into this and I'm getting, you know, $40 back, where they're just like, there's this detachment from people and like understanding how this contest works. And it'd be cool if there was a way of being like, you know, I am going to be super exploitative. I'm going to be way overweight on this player, way overweight on this structural strategy. Like, I think that's the edge. I'm going to push it all in. And like, if you could spit out something that was also like, obviously like expected EV, but then also like a distribution of ROI, like 90% of the time you were going to lose a shit ton of money, but the one time it hits, you're probably going to make a team to the finals. Like stuff like that to help people better conceptualize like what they're actually doing when they are spreading things out or going, you know, overweight, I think would be interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal, especially people coming to best ball who don't have a DFS background. Like, everybody just has to learn the lesson that these super top heavy contests are just absolutely brutal, like, no matter how good you are at the game. And I mean, I've told this story before in conventional DFS, like, one of the highest simulated EVs I ever had was on like a Monday Night Football, and it was like $1 million first prize. And I had like some massive chance of getting first. So my EV on my like $2,800 was like 30 grand or something insane. But it was still like more than 90% chance that I was going to be losing money that day, which I did. Because so much of the equity was on, you know, the 2% chance I had of binking solo first on that contest, right? Because people didn't have the optimal and there was a chance I was going to get to it. So like, even if you just have massive EV, like you're still losing a lot most of the time in these top heavy contests.
Yeah. And it's not over until it's over. Oh God, so please don't congratulate someone when they're in first with 15 minutes left in the second half.
Forget backing down on insider bets and Jonte, man. That should be criminalized immediately. Like, early congratulations should be
punishable. Oh,
that's the worst.
Agreed.
But the other thing I've observed too about like the kind of tools that, you know, track expected ROI and, you know, what your EV is it's like this thing that allows, you know, edge players to to kind of like stay in the mix more, where it's like demoralizing, right? When you lose over and over again. And I feel like those kind of tools, you know, have a really nice place within the ecosystem, one for the edge players, but then also for the newbies from an educational standpoint, like, hey, zoom out, realize how hard this is. I just think it's like good for the ecosystem on both sides of the poles.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I hadn't thought of it that way. Because it's going to make good players feel better and bad players feel worse, right? when you look at these semi-Vs. But yeah, I've definitely written some code to estimate EVs just to cope with long losing streaks at various points. I can relate.
Yeah. I'm good.
Yeah. I will say my estimated EVs for myself are always lower than a lot of the other pros, like, that could just be like, I'm not as good, which is fine. But also, like, I routinely find that people think my edge is much larger than it actually is. They think it's larger than I do, which is really interesting. I think it's just really easy to overestimate your edge, even if you're pretty sharp. So I try not to do that.
I think people are always going to either in some situations, probably rightfully, in some situations, like you said, maybe wrongly, because what you guys do is kind of like behind closed doors, and it does feel like magic to people who can't, you know, do that. And now stuff with like ChatGPT and stuff, I think is demystifying some of that a little bit of like, you can talk to a really smart AI tool and start to hack together stuff that you guys have done. But I do think there's an appreciation for like, how you play the game is so different from how most people did, or at least pre, you know, publicly available sims. And so I think they're always going to put that on a pedestal and glorify it.
Yeah, that's true. I think people both overestimate me and underestimate me, usually overestimate me. Yeah, but it is interesting. And it's always great when I get somebody asking for a player take. That's always fun for me.
Well,
I think 95% of the people listening to this would be better qualified to give a player take than I am.
Well, you also think about like how confirmation bias works, right? Like they perceive, you know, you're a full-time DFS pro. They've heard you talk enough to know like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. And then they say they see your name at the top of the leaderboard. And they're like, there goes Nerdy winning again. That's all he does. It's like, well, they didn't see you in a bunch of the other contests where you lost like slate after slate, right? It's just like when it fits the narrative in their head of you that it works for them. Not when it's like, oh no, I've been taking a bath for 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. My last month has not been the greatest, not horrible, but not so hot, but this is the life I have chosen, I guess, for now.
I will just side note, if you are doing post-contest sims and you're not popping as number one, that's probably a really good sign that your code's really good, because generally speaking, and I've done a whole bunch of different ones over the years, you do much better in your own stuff than other guys. And when they do better than you, you definitely want to check out why. But it's just a, I don't know. I would say that's probably
a great point. I would say the sport I'm most confident in my process in, what
baseball
on? Yeah. The difference between me and the other good players in my post-lock ROI is the smallest. And I think that is as it should be. Because it means I have less bias in that sport than some other sports, I would say. Whereas in something else, I might be double the highest EV of anyone in the contest. That's usually a sign I have more work to do, unless it's just a very green sport. But it's rarely, I'm often just not the first at all in baseball. And when I am, it's not by a lot in my own sims. So I think that's probably a good thing. Some of it is like I have improvements to make, but also it's just I'm not as... bias is one word, but I'm not as aggressive in my assumptions, I would say.
What was, having done this first season of like the weekly BR sims, did you have any kind of like macro takeaways from it? Just like the general ecosystem of the games, kind of like seeing how your ideas translated. Any thoughts on that experience?
I really enjoyed it. I think those games are really interesting. The biggest surprise was that people kept tuning into our show. I figured that after a few weeks, they would just get sick of hearing my keyboard and telling Davis what to play. And then half the time, he'd give it another time. Not half the time, like 48%. No, I'm just kidding. It was really fun. I think, you know, a lot of what happens when you interact with tools, and this is true in poker too, you know, you do learn some things, but a lot of it is just reinforcing things you already knew. Like, I mean, the most obvious one Brian already mentioned, you know, you're in a draft. There's this huge value that's always picked in the first round. He falls to you in the second round in the middle. And it turns out you just always take that guy. I mean, this is not, and this should not be a surprise to anyone, but the software shows it is definitely the case, because you get the higher projected lineup than you should, and you get uniqueness. So it's like a double whammy. So it's just, it's just a slam dunk. But then you find other things that might be a little bit counterintuitive to some people, especially in the very small slates where, like, how much can you mix it up in different spots and how can you do it? One of the biggest things I found in the primetime paloozas, and for people who don't know, these are the two game slates typically. Occasionally they were three games, and it'd be like Sunday night, Monday night, or Monday night, Thursday night, or whatever. And so because it's only four games, you'd have four drafters and there's four quarterbacks. And one of the things my software consistently found is that the field is just way too enthusiastic about drafting quarterbacks early, like almost in every draft. Like, you know, the field is drafting Jalen Hurts sixth, and my software says that you'd be drafted 11th. Like, it seemed like almost every week, like, it was such a strong signal that I wondered if there wasn't something just fundamentally flawed in my software. But I do think there's probably some truth to that people were spending too much of their draft capital in those two gamers on quarterbacks, generally speaking. That was like a big takeaway. And then, like, in the main BRs, I mean, again, this should not come as much a surprise. Like, the earlier you are in the draft, the less weird you should get, because the more in projection you're paying to go down typically. And then later in the draft, the weirder you can get, because it doesn't cost you much. I mean, this is all pretty intuitive, but it is borne out in the software, right?
It's important to mention that, because I think what a lot of guys outthink themselves. There might be one in the chat, a short king, maybe, who outthink themselves, and, you know, they'll be like, oh, I won't take Christian McCaffrey, and because I'm doing this genius strategy that Dan Sims can't understand, which might be true. There is a lot of no ball stuff. That definitely matters. A lot of the best players no ball too, but I think people are like looking for Sims to go. And I give this example, like, you know, there's a late scratch in NBA, but like one before lock that we all know about, and he's going to be highly projected on the point guard starting for $3,500 salary or something. And they want to go like, okay, Sims, tell me when I'm not going to play this guy. And the answer is never. You're always going to play him. The Sims are never going to go, tonight's the night he's going to suck, and kaboom, you're going to just make all the money in the world. It would never be that obvious. They're like, the Sims are going to go, now they might, now what's interesting, Sims, the good ones I use, they'll tell you like combo data, maybe much better. Like, this lineup is significantly better with the obvious play. But like, you're probably a lot of times not outsmarting everybody. The more reason I'm bringing this up with the first round stuff is you're probably not outsmarting everyone as much as you think you are.
And to defend Davis a little bit, like,
no.
Nah, never mind. No, I'm just kidding.
This is my role. I freak out.
So in the show, like, so my software is trying to imagine how you should draft if everyone else is drafting well, which is not the same as how you should draft against an actual field to make the most money. But it's really interesting and gives you a lot of strategic insight, hopefully. But like when you're at a decision point or a node in the tree, like there will be a bunch of choices and one will be at the top, but there will often be like, and it'll say what it, how much it thinks it's worth if you take this guy. But there will often be several guys that are very close in EV.
Yeah.
And because my software is trying to do this all in real time, which is, it was quite an ambitious project. I'm quite proud of it, but it's also very approximate. It has to be able to run quickly enough because it's trying to simulate the entire draft, the rest of the draft in real time and figure out what other people might do based on what they have. So it knows what you need to draft. And this is really hard. So there's a lot of approximation and randomness in the results. So like if there's like six options that are all within 5% of each other, you might as well just take whichever one you like the best or just randomize, because it's that, you know, it spits out a number, but it gives you that illusion of precision. But there's a lot of, there's a lot of randomness behind it. You see the same thing where, you know, people are using a, you know, a tool you might subscribe to and it has these EVs listed, and no matter how good the site is, those EVs are going to have a lot of noise in them, right? They're not literal, actual EVs. They're like lots of assumptions and randomness and all of that stuff. So it's almost better to sort of look at it with like cloudy glasses a little bit to see what's going on rather than like laser focusing on the quote unquote highest EV play when you have something that's necessarily approximate, if that makes any sense.
That makes it 100% sense. I agree with you. That is not what Davis is doing. Davis is waiting till you say the name he already wants to pick. And 10% of the time, you eventually get there. And the other percentage of the time, he goes, well, this can't be right this time because it's not the name I want.
That phrase you used, or I don't know if you said that exactly, but like the illusion of precision. I've been thinking about that a lot because I get tricked. You know, the players have to be ordered in the app, whether by ADP or your own ranks, and you get so excited of like, oh, this guy slips two spots, or like, oh, I have to get this guy. And then you go, and then I'll like often go look at my projection set, and I'm like, all 10 of these NBA guys are like within a point and a half of projection. And yet I've convinced myself the guy at 11 is worth so, so much more than number 20, even though it's like you almost need something. I guess obviously tiers do this, but it's like if you could have like a colored tier within your app, that's actually a good overlay idea there too.
That is
like
a good
idea. And then you could RNG within that tier a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about that exact idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. It just the BBMs are just so big and complicated. But for BRs, that was a very similar idea. Yeah, that we had is like not necessarily Jalen Hurts every single time here, pal. You know, like maybe these other picks are also doable for sure. You know, this is kind of one like I got when you're trying to beat a game, right? And you're on your own, and you're just thinking about it constantly, and like, how can I beat these jerks? You know, like what can I do? That was kind of one of them for me, the optimizer. Was what you're this effect you're talking about, Pete? Like, because you'll have a guy who's like 0.7 points more in the NBA than somebody else, and the optimizer doesn't give a shit. Like, it's like, no, that's 0.7, bro. You want me to optimize this? You're getting Giannis every single time because he's 0.7 points more. Yeah, 150. And then you're like, okay, I'll up the uniques, I guess. And then I'm like, this can't be the best way to do this. And like, oh, let's add randomness. I'm like, yeah, randomness works in some ways, but is it really that useful here? Maybe there's a better way to do this. And it's because of that illusion of precision idea that you guys are talking about that started me like, going, okay, what else can I do?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was going to say the other thing, Dan, for me, that was like the value of the like sim data you were posting for the BRs this year was just the constant reminder in that, you know, my default, like I think like a lot of people, I like to stack in these and seeing the stacking data week after week after week and being like, you know, it's generally around like 30 to 35% of the time that you should be stacking. And then you had the granular data for the specific quarterbacks too. And just getting hit over the head with that every week of like, RNG yeah. this. It doesn't need to be stacked. Doesn't need to be stacked. Like that was a very valuable for me just because, again, my lizard brain just wanted to kick in and constantly stack. And I was probably running into a lot of chalk combos, a lot of diminishing my ceiling in my lineup. So I enjoyed having that.
No, that's great to hear. I think that's one of the best things that tools like the one I created can do for you is they can show you what your unnecessary patterns are, your unnecessary habits. Like, because I just feel like at a high level in any game, if you have some kind of habit of play, there's a very good chance that a lot of other people do too, and it's going to be overdone and you're costing yourself EV. So if you can weed those out and not automatically do X when it doesn't actually get you anything, like it's okay to not stack sometimes, or it's okay to double stack sometimes, or you know these kinds of things.
But like the meta is so important in like DFS, basketball, whatever, and it's not like it used to be, unfortunately. Where whatever the meta is, everyone's doing it. Chipotle Addict just won a Millie Maker with a double stack with three run backs. Well, I'm triple stacking with six run backs. You know what I mean? Like everyone's doing it. They don't really do, or like even in the old PGA days where it's like, oh my God, you know, Scheffler, he was barely playing back then, if at all. Scheffler missed the cut. I'm not going to take him this week. No, he's going to be 30-40% owned every single week now. They figured that out. But like the idea, this idea, you can get this from Sims, but just generally speaking, is being ahead of the new heuristics is big. And like Pete, I think one of them for sure you kind of got on was like the late round QB thing and BRs and best balls. And just being, because like think about like the evolution of DFS, you know, when we first started, you know, no people weren't even stacking in MLB. Like yeah. Think about how crazy it is. So if you just get in on in hockey. So if you just get like that whole book, whatever that get, what was that book, Pete, about the hockey beep on a Jeep?
Oh yeah, Dueling with Kings.
Dueling with Kings. Do we have him on the show? Anyways,
he would come on though. I actually bumped into him when I was in Dallas. He's a good dude.
Which one? The book writer?
Dan Barbarisi, who wrote the book. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because beep on a Jeep's messaged me before too. We could probably get both of them on. Yeah. But anyways, just the idea of knowing the stack back then was worth a decent, a lot of money, you know, like, oh, guess what? So like the quicker you can, now these heuristics, they're going to get less and less valuable as the market matures and becomes more efficient. But like the quicker you can get on these heuristics, the more money you're going to make. So, you know, Sims can help you do that. It depends on the type of Sim too, EQ and exploitative and how they're doing it and what it's telling you. So it's really important to know what's going on in your sim provider, or you just trust them, you know. Like that's really kind of all you can do because they can't really tell you what's going on.
Yeah,
right, unless you come to run the Sims, because we're going to try and make it as transparent as possible.
I'm not sure like what, like some of the tricks and stuff of the code, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the how, not the what, that we're going to protect, right, as much as possible.
How do you – you mentioned, like, some of these being, like, really daunting research projects. And I assume there's, you know, scenario like, where if you had infinite time to spend on this, like, you could literally put hundreds and hundreds of hours into this stuff. So how do you think about, like, okay, I'm going to devote this much time to it. It might be a dead end, but I still have to juggle a bunch of other responsibilities. Like, how do you tackle such a behemoth of a project like that? Or think about
it? I wish I could tell you I'm like planned and disciplined about it, but I'm kind of all over the place. Like I just got, in addition to having a small DFS slump, which is whatever, I had like a more troubling like engineering slump. Like I really didn't get much done of any value for like a couple months, feels like. But that's part of the deal. Like I just got fired up again like a couple days ago and now know what I want to do, but like it's fits and starts. It's like I have some ideas, it's really daunting, procrastinate, have some more ideas, try one out, it doesn't work, bury head in sand, try something else, work on other, I mean, it's a lot of the stuff, like the stuff I describe as research is stuff that might not work. So like, so I'm working right now on a project for Run the Sims, a new sport. That's not research because I know it will work. That's just a project. But something like the BBM is very much research. It's like, can I make something that scales up enough to be useful?
Yeah.
Don't know. I hope so. It would be cool. I know there are other people who have tried, and this isn't a slight, how I've tried simpler approaches to simulating BBM, which is also valuable. But I want to, so that's not like an insult. I want to try something really ambitious, and as such, it might not work. So.
One thing I would say to you, and maybe you're already thinking about it in this regard, and to make it so it's not a lost cause, like if you do hit a really tough dead end, is I do think people would be interested in like how some of the sausage got made, maybe not like the super in the weeds, but like understanding like this is why I hit a dead end. You know, this was what I was trying to solve and why this problem with my current computing power wasn't like possible to break through. Like I think people would be interested in hearing about that process.
Maybe, although the ugly truth is so much of this stuff is just gnarly engineering stuff. It's like, I mean, it's all shit. You like the old joke. I don't know if you heard that it's programmers or like mushrooms. You throw them in a dark room and then you shovel shit on them and then they prosper. So like a lot of it is like, it's not fun or sexy stuff. Like it's, like 5% of what I do is like cool new idea, and like 95% is just grunt work. That's just the way it is. I guess I could talk about approaches maybe for best ball, perhaps. I don't know though. I don't want to give too much away if it becomes like amazing and productizable.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Well, but there's also the benefit, like you said, if assuming it's not like super proprietary, like there is that element of like, all right, I'm going to put this back out into the world, almost like an open like GitHub repo or whatever. And it's like, oh, maybe if you look at this, you might be seeing it from a different angle than I was.
I think when I retire, that would be tempting. But there's a lot of stuff, like, honestly, a lot of this stuff. Well, there is a little bit of custom algorithms that I designed, especially for best ball, that I haven't seen anyone doing yet. Maybe they are trying. It's not really like, I don't know why they would. if you're not doing this for like training, it's sort of like a ton of work for not much value. Like it's not like DFS where you can, you know, scale things up if you have something really strong. But a lot of it is just making code fast enough to use. Honestly, yeah. It's like a lot of what I do.
This is how Dan always reassures me, where I'm like, oh, we can't do a video on this because then everyone's going to steal the idea. He's like, Brian, no one's going to code that. No one's going to code that idea.
There are people that can do it, but they don't need my help. I mean, if people have the chops to make really fast code in this space, they can, and me talking isn't going to change that. I think honestly there's far more lucrative businesses to be in. Like I am like a poster child for like not understanding opportunity cost. Monetarily speaking, I could be doing much more valuable things, but this is too fun. I'm too lazy and this is too fun, so I keep doing this stuff instead.
I mean, that's I even run into that stuff when I think about making content, right? Of like, you know, there's some more lower common denominator type stuff you could do that would have a wider audience, but you would get, you know, bored with it. It wouldn't be fun or interesting for you. In the same way, I'm sure you guys could think of some products that would have a much bigger, you know, addressable market share, but also like, you're not going to want to spend 6 months working on something that you don't find intellectually interesting.
Yeah, it's true. I do have stress. Sometimes I wake up kind of early and I just like my stress engine starts running. Like that's the emotion I always have the most problem with. Some people it's like anger, rage, some is sadness, depression. In me, it's more anxiety. I'm like an anxiety guy when I have an issue. And like my mind's just like thinking about like, you know, what happens if this downswing goes forever? And like, you know, I can't do this forever. And what if this is a waste of time? And what if I can't get a job? But I reassure myself, like, worst case scenario, I could get a job that I hate that pays decently enough. So, you know, there's always that.
We just talked about people overestimating Nerdy Tenor, and he just admitted, even in his deepest, darkest thoughts, he thinks like Davis, what if I have to go work at State Farm? That's what I heard from that.
There's a couple other stories we should, this still is lulls. So maybe we should talk.
Yeah.
First one is Super Draft shutdown, or I think it shut down today, yesterday or Friday. Anyways, for people who don't know, the DFS site Super Draft, if you have any money on there, hopefully you got it out or if you still can try to get it out. Public service announcement, but yeah, Super Draft is like
I have a few hundred bucks on there. I think I gotta see if I can get it.
I guess I should have mentioned this to Dan earlier. I thought I posted it in our chat, but maybe I didn't. So it was one of the smaller sites, so kind of in the heyday of DFS or in heyday, you know, when it was more popular before sports betting. I think it was like the fourth biggest site. It went DraftKings, FanDuel, Yahoo, and Fantasy Draft kind of were neck and neck, and then Super Draft was below that. And you can make some coin on there. You can make some decent money on there. And eventually, the prize pools just got they couldn't guarantee them, and I just kind of took my money off there eventually. I'm like, this is because it's real hard to do, you know, five sites at once, right? Like, and it depends on the sport too, but eventually got too small for me. And I was just like, and the bonuses were drying up and stuff like that to make you like even want to like go, like, yeah, there's a free whatever, you know, I might as well keep playing. And so I stopped, and unfortunately, because this is not good for anybody here, you know, in the industry. They are closing shop.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I just went to their Twitter. They don't have any announcement or anything.
I'm like 100%, 95% sure I'm right.
I believe you.
Okay.
I also clicked my I had a D. I always like, you know, there's a random accounts or whatever. I'd be like, have I ever interacted with them? And June 27th, 2020, I wrote to SuperDraft's account, "Hi, I just deposited on SuperDraft, but running into verification issues. Any chance you can help me?" So I was playing.
I think
over
I remember that
5 years ago.
And I DM'd my contact over there, I think, to help get you. Yeah, so it's still they took away, like, I had like points and stuff on there, and that's gone. So they definitely did something, but I'm pretty sure you should have received an email.
Yeah, I'll
check. They're shutting down. I have a screen cap of it, Pete, too, if we can't.
Okay.
If we can't find it, but because I sent it to my brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember they made a push. Like, I remember we did a little deal with them on Splash Play like 3 or 4 years ago. I think they were talking to you, Brian, too, if there was maybe like a fit, you know, for Lull Spot. Like, they were trying to get some traction going in the space.
Yeah, they tried.
They did. It's hard, though. I think, like, to compete with the big boys, like, you need to maintain a player base to keep the prize pools big enough, which means you're going to have to get regulars and pros on to get the prize pools large, but like Brian said, it's hard to do multiple sites after a certain point. So I think you're going to have, like, Rake Free or Rake Back or something to keep those contests large enough. Otherwise, you just get a death spiral. The contests get smaller, people leave, they get smaller still, more people leave. I mean, so you gotta make the fields large enough. Otherwise, people just, like, why would I go to fantasy site number 4 or 5 for 5K up top on NFL Sunday? Like, nobody wants to do that.
And they should have, because it was easier games. Yeah. especially it depends on the year, but fantasy draft did go rank free, Dan, and then they immediately went under.
Yeah, you need to budget for it. Well, this is what Yahoo did, right? They had a lot
They got screwed over by COVID, honestly. Who knows what would have happened with fantasy draft? That was such a bummer. But they went rank free, and then COVID happened, and they just couldn't because they had all those months of rank free when they first started. I'm assuming they were probably like, okay, we're going to go rank free, and then eventually we're going to drive up traffic because we're rank free, and then COVID hits.
Rough. Somebody asked if that was the no salary DFS. That's right. Yeah, Superdraft had a format where you was how many guys? I have the code for it somewhere. You pick your guys. There's no salary, but all of the players have a multiplier. So the fantasy points they get is multiplied. So the scrubbier the player, the bigger the multiplier. So if you pick Travis Kelce, the multiplier is one. Yeah. But if you pick, you know,
Noah Gray.
Justin
Wilson. Noah Gray, it might be three and a half or something, right?
Yeah.
Which an interesting game. I always like to see new games. Maybe someone else will pick up that idea and make that happen. But it's hard to get people to try new games. There is the whole like the Superflex that DraftKings started last year. We talked about not this NFL season, but the one before, and like every week the top prize was lower and lower and lower. It's the same thing all over again. It's like if you want people to pick up a new game, you have to the prizes have to be getting the same or bigger to establish an audience. So like I think the first contest was either 50 or 100K to first, and then by the end of the season it was like down to 20. And then I don't even know what it was this year. I didn't look.
Quick note, Pete just showed the email. So for people who are listening only,
you
can still withdraw. I was wrong. So starting February 1st, you can only withdraw. So you can't play anymore, but at least you can get your money out of there. So, and they've always paid me. So it was, shining star, an optimistic view is underdog. I mean, underdog is nothing, you know, it's a different game. It's, you know, not DFS, but like, there is openings in the way these companies are being run. It's, you know, we don't have to name specific ones, but there's only a few left. So there is some openings. I really don't like how they got us by the balls now. Oh, we had the rewards rollout, Pete, for the Onyx tier.
Yeah.
And there was like 12 options. Not including the experiences and stuff. Although I did miss the watch section, which was in a different email apparently or something, but there was like way less options this year.
Yeah, that's true. Although we're getting something in 6 days, I think, if you're Diamond or Onyx, they have something.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there's some like bonus thing. I wonder if it isn't because they're late with all the original reward stuff. It'd be, I don't know. I'll take it.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. I'm not trying to sound like salty, like I want more. I'm just saying like, there was more, so it's not like a sign, you know, super draft closing, the they don't have as much competition, and they're not giving away as much stuff. The, you know, you don't see as many ads.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I am optimistic about Underdog though, because Underdog, like, it's not just a new game and they did a good job cultivating it, but it just is really fun. It's really fun to play. Like Superdraft it was like they had a new format, but it wasn't any different than, you know, well, it's another spreadsheet for me to upload. Like it didn't have the extra level of fun you get in a draft, right? I think that's why Underdog is so successful right now, seemingly so. I don't know what their numbers are, but I'm pretty optimistic about that format going forward.
Yeah, because there's this element to your point, like a lot of people who play fantasy obviously like the sweat. That's universal across it, but I don't think people love the, like, there are some people who like fiddling with the optimizer, like that gets them going, or they have their spreadsheet that gets them going, but it can't scale in the way that an enjoyment of a draft does. Like
That's right.
People who just love that process of drafting is like unmatched in any other kind of fantasy format.
I agree. It's almost like DFS is like buying a lottery ticket, and like Underdog is like a scratch off. Like you get that immediate feedback as you're going through the draft, that of stuff going your way or not going your way, right? Whereas fantasy, it's like, you know, plan your whole thing and then wait.
What about DFS is more like blackjack, and Underdog's more like poker? Because with blackjack, you have to put, you can beat, you're not going to beat it unless you put in a lot of work. But the work, and the work isn't like reading other people, or it's like actual data stuff and, you know, counting cards, or unless you're looking at whole cards and all that type of stuff. But like leaving that aside, where Underdog's more like you're playing against other guys. You could screw him over. Like I could take the guy he wants and screw him, and or he could take mine. Oh my God, when should I get it?
I think the part where that analogy falls is it's like the opposite, in that like the amount of game theory required to play DFS is probably more comparable to poker, where blackjack's a little bit more straightforward. Like a draft is a little bit more straightforward of like, you know, what you're doing. Like the decision tree in poker versus blackjack is like wildly different.
Yeah, but it's, sure. But I've, with his analogy though, I think is where is what was the relation you did?
Scratch off versus lotto.
Is yeah, like, because it is more like it's you're not playing against the other guy in poker. It is more of a lot like a lottery, but it's a skilled lottery is what I was trying to get at. You know, it's like blackjack's more, you're not playing against somebody specifically directly, but it's more of a skill. I guess if you're playing head to head or three mans.
I get it. Yeah. I guess it's more like Keno versus poker. Like, I mean, you can't beat Keno, but imagine if Keno were beatable. That would be like DFS. Like you get your sheets together and you get all your numbers and you submit them and then you wait for everything to happen.
Like a beatable Keno.
Right. Yeah.
But
And there, the level of effort of what's required for DFS, at least in this, you know, iteration, there's a lot of work that goes into it. Whereas like to draft, like the equivalent, like a phone shitter bro is going to have so much a higher likelihood of success in a draft than they are in salary cap DFS. Like the ability to luck into something good is so much higher in the draft arena.
Yeah, I would guess, I have no data to back this up. Be interesting for somebody to do this analysis. If you looked at the distribution of post-lock EVs for like, I don't know, regular slate football on DraftKings, and you compared it to the BR for the same weekend, I think there's going to be far less of the extreme losing end in the BRs. Like, it's hard. Like, it's so notable when some terrible, terrible drafter arrives. That I think it's hard. It's pretty easy to put in a lineup in a Sunday millimaker that's like minus 35% or more or worse. That's not hard to do. I think if you're drafting like reasonably, like just manually, I think it's hard to do that poorly. That's my gut, is that you really have to try to get just a dog shit underdog lineup, but it's quite simple to do that in DFS.
Well, and even think of the equivalent of like, say you just pressed run, and this is even assuming an optimizer, like you just press optimize. And so you just have like this super chalk lineup with all the best plays. And it's probably like, you know, majorly duped or good chunks of it. If you just auto off of ADP in a draft, there's a chance that some of your opponents are doing really weird shit and you get just some insane ADP fallers and some unique combos. Like you're so much more likely to run into the nuts that way than you are even like a fully optimized DFS lineup winning you the millie.
That's true. Yeah. It does have that weird thing where your opponent's mistakes rebound to you in your room and like alter. I mean, obviously you're always when you're winning because the field is making mistakes. But it's a weird dynamic that, like, the room you're in affects the EV, you know, of your lineup. We see that most extraordinary, with the most intensely, obviously, in the two game slates where the two game drafts, where there can be situations where it's like, oh shit, if I don't get a running back right now, I'm screwing myself, because by the time it comes back around to me, it'll be gone, and then I will have lost just a ton of projection. So it's actually, that's the one format where it actually is pretty easy to draft a terrible team, is the two gamers. If you're not paying attention, and there's some scarcity at a position and you miss it, it hurts a lot. And I have, we've seen on the show, you know, a $10, you know, a $10 battle royale two gamer. And like, we get to the last pick and we're like, what's this guy's EV? And it's like 35 cents, like just stone dead. And the 35 cents is because some miracle outcomes, he gets them in cash. Like, so that is the one exception to the whole, like,
yeah,
you know, playoffs, the best and the worst. Yeah. Playoffs is probably another one, right?
Yeah. Cause they could just draft. There's just no chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was it was recently, cause I've been doing the NBA drafts, you know, and occasionally, you know, it's like, all right, I'm getting bored of doing the same turn combo. So I'm going to reach and get myself a unique combo. And then like two picks later, you see someone else who gets like an insane combo that you like better because you were the one that did it. Yeah. I'm like, I like your combo better. You got it because I got bored and was trying to get something unique.
Well, we found that on our Endgame show, we solved some really small draft games, and we found the dynamic you just described is absolutely a thing at Equilibrium, where you're at a decision point and you usually take the chalky guy, and then you occasionally take something else because it's worth it to get different, and you in effect hand EV to the next person because you wanted to get different. But it's actually, there are places where you can show that has to be correct, where it's like, yeah, I got to this weird combo, but the next guy got something even better. Yeah. It's just a funny part of the game, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
I was watching, I don't know if I mentioned this on this on Lulz, but I was watching this Madden streamer, and he was talking about prop betting at a high level. Like he knew arbitrages, you know, stuff normies don't know about. And then he got asked about DFS. And he goes, don't even bother playing. He goes, there's just like so many good players. You can't beat it. You can't beat it anymore. And I was like, fuck, is this is on a Madden stream. This guy does Madden full time. Like, is this like what people think about? Because, you know, they grew up with video games different than our generation, you know, Dan, not so much Pete, but I'm in the middle here, but where video games weren't, you know, so popular, where everyone knows, like, you don't want to start playing a video game like 7 months after it's come out, because you're just going to get smoked online. You know what I mean? Every video game, they're just all, just the stone cold nuts, you know, S-tier players are left over. And so maybe they all think about that about DFS.
Well, there's always going to be beatable DFS. It's just a question of how much money are you trying to make? Like, if you just want to play DFS that you can beat, you can find it. Are you going to win a lot of money easily? No. If you want to make serious money at DFS, it's a lot of work. Wouldn't recommend starting from zero. But if you're just in the $1 contest, I mean, those should be profitable forever, right? Like, nobody's going to buy, you know, $200 a month sub to like put down $10 of volume a day. Like, maybe there's a sicko who does, but
I think this guy was an outlier because he knew so much about sports betting. But my point was more like, is that meta out there in the universe that DFS is just unbeatable? Don't play with, you know, people under 28 or something. It's like, oh well, shit, that DFS doesn't got a good chance if everyone's thinking that. But I'm assuming he's an outlier.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it is sad, right? That, like, you know, that's the current, you know, DFS needs a PR image, right? If that's what the Madden YouTubers, and it's hard to blame them, right? Like, if you think, even if you wanted to take a shot, like a lotto type shot, it's like making a single game parlay with eight legs is a lot easier to do than building a DFS lineup that has a chance. And you think about, like, the way the sweat works too, where it's like, man, you know, these guys could hit three things completely right, have like two of the highest scores on the slate, the highest, and like sniff a min cash, you know, like that could be a demoralizing thing. And it is a bummer that that's kind of the state of how DFS is, both the reality and how it's being perceived.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's ways to address it. I'm just making stuff up. I think you've talked about this idea, but if you can imagine having something like, you know, and the poker sites have these rooms where you like sign up for like a tournament, and then once it fills, it goes off. And sometimes they're like single table tournaments, but sometimes it could be like a 100-person, $5 tournament. And you just get in a queue, and then when it fills, it runs. Like, if they could do something like that for DFS, just have like, they already have it to some degree, but just have like, you could imagine a lobby full of 100-mans and have at all different stakes. And when they fill, they fill. If you wanted to make it feel less unbeatable, especially at the lower stakes, they could do that if they want to.
And I do think that would probably be close to the solution of having way more contests that were grouped by experience level.
Yeah.
Where you could how big could you get, you know, that would be a welcoming thing for a casual player of like, you aren't going up against anyone in this contest. Like, how big could you get that pool? Like you said, it would be hard to do it from a guaranteed prize pool standpoint, but if you just like the old school poker days, let people sign up for it. It's just like, hey, all the newbies, like, could you maybe get a contest that is $200,000 up top? That's just a bunch of $5 newbies like piling in there on a Sunday, you know?
Yeah, I kind of like how they did. So they did some things to this product I really don't like. But the one thing I liked about the DraftKings Pick'em thing, where is that you would basically every dollar you put in would go into a separate contest as many times as they could. So they had this like auto matching. So it would just sort of scale up with the number of people entering.
Yeah,
and then. I really like that. Something like that just for regular DFS would be welcome, I think. It's pretty, simple. For years.
Games too, like, do you guys steal the Zoom poker idea? Would be great for DFS. And and as long as they're lobbying, you know, I know they are. As long as they're lobbying, they should just remove the cap. It should be just like poker, where they guarantee a prize pool, but not the entrance amount, and whoever signs up, it could go bigger than that, just like poker on a Sunday when it gets, you know, the guaranteed 200,000 buy-in on a Sunday online site, at least back in the day. Who knows what they do now? And then it's, you know, it's 12,000 people to get that number. If it's less than that, it's overlaid. If it's over than that, the prize pool goes up. You know, I think that would help, like, get some like big weeks sometimes, like, oh my god, 5 million to first and draw more interest.
Yeah. I think that would be great too, because then it takes the pressure off of DraftKings, especially for niche things and new stuff. Like, they're not taking any kind of financial risk floating a new contest if they don't have to put a guarantee out there, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would lead to way more experimentation for sure. Yeah. All right, guys, I have to power this down so I can get ready for ship chasing, which is in 10 minutes. But Nerdy, appreciate you joining us today on Lulz. Obviously, in-game syndicate, run the Sims. Anything else you'd like people to check out?
Well, we've got a lot of content already. If you haven't been to Endgame yet, there's a lot of videos we've done already. And then for the Super Bowl, Run the Sims will be free if you want to try it out. So people can play with that, see what we're starting with. So, I recommend you check it out if you haven't yet. Is that already turned on? Is it already free? Actually, I haven't looked. It is.
Should be free. Yeah. Justin gave us a code too, Endgame, for
that's right.
Yeah, to get Grandfather Day and the price with 10% off.
Awesome. I'm going to on Saturday night, I'm going to do a DFS After Dark for YouTube members and just build some showdown lineups, build some pick-ems and stuff. So I'll pull up Run the Sims and we'll mess around with some of that stuff.
I'm doing a show with Davis and Pat tomorrow. So on Pat's Pat Mayo's network. So
nice.
We'll show it up there.
Awesome. All right, guys. Appreciate you hanging out in the chat. Like I said, you can go and check out Ship Chasing here in about 10 minutes. And then we'll have the show with the Badge Bros tomorrow, off and on the clock, building some Super Bowl pick-ems. And then that After Dark show on Saturday night for YouTube members. And Brian, do we already have our guests lined up for next week, or is that still in flux?
Yes. Yeah. Adam.
It's awesome.
Little known DFS player, Ship My Money.
There we go.
Who's joining us.
Ship My Money next week on Lulz for Brick, for Nerdy. I'm Pete. We'll see you guys next time.